Hola, my name is Elias Torres, host of the American Dream Podcast. On this show, I talk to underrepresented founders and seasoned executives who have achieved their versions of the American Dream. We discover their origin stories, their career trajectories, and their biggest lessons learned. On this episode, I talk with Lily Gangas, Chief Technology Community Officer at the KPOR Foundation, a private foundation focusing on promoting equity and inclusion in the tech sector. Lily shares how she became interested in engineering, why she believes technology can drive change, and her perspective on policy's influence on diversity in tech. Let's get into it.
Hello, Lily. Tell us who you are. Tell us where you come from.
Lily Gangas. I'm the Chief Tech Community Officer at the KPOR Foundation. And so as you were sharing, Elias, we have a bunch of different organizations, but it's a family of organizations, really helping create a more equitable ecosystem, specifically in technology. And I think for me, this work, leading to this work has been a journey of a lot of different journeys that I've had, to be honest, but it all starts similar to you, right? Like being an immigrant, being able, somebody who is fascinated with technology, seeing the opportunity, and now being able to have had some of those opportunities early on in my career to now be able to help share that out with our community and the new generation. So I think it's a little bit of a unique perspective of being able to have had been in as a developer, where I started, in college as an electrical engineer at USC. But before that, I came from Bolivia when I was 6 years old, immigrated with my mom and my sister to Southern California. And I think that's part of the, as we're entering in these times, right, where there's a lot of uncertainty, changes on a lot of different areas, not just on technology side, cultural, globalization, just so many that I think it helps me orient myself, like, where do I come from and why? And I think especially with technology, I think at the very, very bone for me, it's really been about having a unifying language that was really based off math. I didn't know English. I didn't know. So I really just made friends knowing math as a kid. And I think that just helped me be able to also discover new paths that I didn't think, otherwise I wouldn't have gotten exposure when I was, younger. But fast forward to where I'm at now, where being able to build on working on hardware and software to then working in the private sector at different consulting.
Hold on. Let's go back. Okay. I want 6 year old Lily. How much do you remember Bolivia?
Oh, the 6 year old girl from Bolivia remembers beautiful landscapes. Definitely where I grew up is Cochabamba, Bolivia, which is a little bit like the valley.
Is that where the rivers?
But we're I guess landlocked. We do have
But there's a whole different rivers.
Not in that area. Mine is like the, I guess just more where I grew up is like valley area.
Valley. Okay.
Yeah, we actually had to on the water side. We had to have water reservoirs because we tended to have a lot of issues getting access to water. And there's like a whole series of the Bolivian water wars that were in history. So it's a very interesting aspect of that. But I think, the little girl in Bolivia, when we're seeing, knowing that, there was a lot of focus on infrastructure. I do think there was a lot of focus on knowing your neighbor. There was a lot of focus on being in the kind of multi-generational homes, right? Being able to have that. And then I think when we moved to the U.S. after my grandma passed, and so we lost that type of, perspective and
the multi-generational.
That's right. Yeah.
Do you go back often? Or?
Actually, I have not been back in over 20 plus years. I was supposed to go back for right before the pandemic. There was actually an opportunity to go talk to the women of Bolivia that were focused on technology, and it was supposed to be for International Women's Day, but wow. Like a week before the pandemic hit. So unfortunately, I haven't gone, but something that I definitely want to go back to.
So it's crazy, right? Because I just went to Nicaragua after 31 years.
After 31 years, how was that?
I was supposed to go during the pandemic and it got canceled. It was incredible, because I've been here 31 years, and I'm like, I was talking to someone earlier today, and I was like, I was a stranger. And over there, people they couldn't tell I was not from there. And it just felt amazing. First time in 31 years that people say, you're from here. This is your pueblo. This is your country. And I was like, what? And I didn't realize how much I wanted to hear that. You know, I've been like, oh, I'm fine. I'm doing fine. I'm over here. It's like, yeah, American dream, blah, blah, blah. And then I forgot. So it's like, we're in that same group. Like, we left and you've got to go back. Lily, you got to go back.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I was supposed to go back with my mom during that time. So we were really excited to do that. And but I definitely want to go back and be able to actually also just to your point, right, be able to go to where I grew up. And my grandpa, he passed away last year, and he's also been kind of like my last hold into my culture. And so I got over the past years, I would just record him, take pictures. And I told myself that I did, you know, want to go back and do that, but also take friends so that way they can see, also see part of my, where I grew up and the culture, and also just discover the natural beauty that there is. Like, I know that there's Uyuni, especially like the salt flats, it's always on the National Geographic. And I'm like, I have not been there, and I'm from there. So I'm like, I gotta.
That's kind of like my summary of the trip in a way. That is like, when I lived there, I used to say, oh, Nicaragua is such a poor country, so small. It doesn't have resources. I don't know, nothing historic. And I want to go to the United States. And then I come here, and after 31 years of being here, I go back and I'm like, wow. This is what we are looking for: nature, beauty, organic food, natural everything. People are warm, people are nice, and it's just like dirt road, plant something, eat up food off the tree, and like eat the fish that we just fished, go on the ocean, go on the river, drive a car over the river. And I'm like, this is amazing. And like, so all the stuff that I always like thought it was bad, now I'm like, this is like where I want to be. It's like I don't want to be in Belmont, Massachusetts, you know, with stuffy people don't talk to me and don't want to say hi, and they see me with my dog, they go on the other side of the road. Over there, everybody talks to you. So like you nailed it. Like everything that you said, it's like, wow. And the salt flats and all that stuff must be magnificent. It's like one of a kind, right?
Yeah. I think that's such an important part too as well, because, and I would say it's because of the multi-generation with my mom, my grandpa, having that pride and understanding of where you come from, I think has been something that it stayed with me no matter what. Like, you know, it's like you come, yes, it's Bolivia, but to your point, right, externally, other folks maybe have categorized it as a developing country. But what I remember is, like, you know, we had a lot of engineers, we had a lot of doctors, we had people, we had indigenous communities that are working together. But there are different opportunities, of course, right? And there's reasons why we created here. And to go back and experience that, I think I'm inspired by your journey. I got to put it on my list for 2025 to 2026.
I think you should do it. I think you should do it. I definitely, I highly recommend it. It was amazing. I took the whole family and everybody. Oh, anyways, yes. This podcast is not about me. I got to stop. It's about you. So 6 years old, computer engineering. What happened there? That's crazy. Oh. I love that.
Yeah, so I did electrical engineering. And actually, it's
electrical, sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I was in the Valley, I grew up in San Fernando Valley in Reseda, and it was probably one of the few magnet schools that had, you know, engineering focus. And honestly, this is a part that goes full circle to what I do now, which is there was a young woman, there was a guest speaker that came into my classroom, a Latina that came into the classroom, who was a civil engineer, who was explaining her journey, why she decided to do, and we all got books. And I was like, oh my God, okay, what are the different types? And I just remember going through, I'm like, okay, not that, not that, not that. And then I ended up in the electrical engineering. I'm like, okay, I love electronics. Let me see what this is. And I didn't have any other exposure. And I applied to schools thinking like, that's exactly what I want to do, because I want to learn about all these different electronics and gadgets. It's like, it's interesting, especially at that time, you know, in high school, where like the way we listen to music, the way I started to see the evolution where we were going from, you know, my mom's cassette tapes to like CDs to eventually.
Yeah, okay, I didn't want to say anything. I was screwing it up, but like I was going to say Walkman, maybe.
There was definitely the Walkman for sure.
Okay, good. Yeah, the yellow one. I had the cheap ones. I had
the cheap one. Yeah,
we're Latinos. Like, why are we going to have the yellow one? Of course,
My mom, whatever we could afford. But then after that, I was like, oh, wow. Once I went into college, right? It was like the different levels of exposure and like being able to be with, you know, other folks who graduated top of their class. I was also a salutatorian for my high school. I didn't know what that was. I'm like, I'm just going to, you know, do the work and, you know, be active. And I was like, oh, wow. And I got a scholarship to go to USC full ride. And now I get to appreciate what that means. Back then I was like, well, the school is the one that gave me the most money. So I guess that's where I'm going. But I really got to now be able to see the opportunities that pathway provided to me. And I would tell you, and it kind of goes back to what you were sharing earlier about the families, knowing your roots. I remember, I think it was like my sophomore year. And that's, again, a time where based on the statistics that we, you know, from the Caper Center, we look at, you know, where our community is succeeding.
Well, drop some stats. You guys are the most sophisticated. Like, you got the source, the truth, like, give me some stats.
Definitely. I mean, you know, the current numbers, especially when we think about in the workplace from being in the tech workplace, our numbers aren't, unfortunately, have not been moving past 7%, 6%, 7%.
And that's on the lower end too, right? It's not like we're like 6% in the vice president.
No, exactly. And when you start to even look at it, you know, from leadership positions, the engineers, the software engineers, it starts to get even less. And like last year when we launched the Latina Tech Ecosystem Report, I mean, that's the part that we saw where even like when, and you're in those executive roles, right? If we're like less than 6% of the technical roles, if we're less than 5% of executive roles, and then 3% less than those board seats, then there's a lot of decisions are being made without even really taking into account the innovation that our journeys can provide. Where, in my opinion, we are, by not having this representation, at least a parity of what we are representative of the workforce, the education, we're really leaving out a lot of innovation, right? And I think, and I connect it back to my days as learning what engineering was about, because when my first job that I got in was thinking about what are the different use cases. And you had to think about your own unique journey. It allows you to have those insights that a lot of other people might not have. That's your sauce, right? And I do think that our specific lived journeys, wherever you're at, it's what provides you that edge of thinking about a problem differently because you've been exposed to different things. And so I think that centering it on that, I think, is important. But when you think about all the, you know, the six-year-old kid, well, when I was there to now, like right now in the United States, a little bit over 25% of the kids in K-12 education are Latinos. And so when we think about the workforce.
Wait, what's the number? Say it again.
A little bit over 25% of the current 25%. Students, all K-12. And those same talent need to be further invested in. They're going to be the future workforce, even right now, right? Like the other stat that we always share is like the Department of Labor said, but that between now and 2030, more than 70% of the new net workforce is Latino. And so those are the folks who are coming in, and how are we investing into that, you know? And reflecting in the story that I just shared when I first came, looking at that six-year-old, if I would have been exposed to computer science as an example, even earlier on, right?
Yeah,
no, absolutely. English and Spanish, maybe the barrier there would have been, you know, mitigated. And then now, so that's the other part. That's, I think, the other opportunity is as we're thinking in this world of AI as well, like multi-language, multimodal. There's so much stuff that I think we have to make sure that we are also addressing from the beginning, right? Which is the opportunity of that six-year-old to have that critical thinking, the opportunities to be able to be where we're at now at this pace. Yeah. You probably saw your Walkman. You went from the Walkman, the Discman to now like everything's in streaming. And that's been what, within like 15, 20, 30, less than
well, hold on, before it's streaming, you missed the iPod. the iPod. and the minis and stuff. Question, before we go into this, I want to talk a little bit more about that. But before you go into that, let's talk a little bit about Caper. Like, what is it? What do you do? What's your day job?
So for the folks who may not be familiar, the Caper Foundation, we're a private foundation. We focus specifically on advancing equity and inclusion in the tech sector. And what does that mean, right? We specifically have four focus areas around creating more accessible pathways into computer science in K-12, exactly what we were sharing, right? The talent, making sure that we're helping provide just not the courses, but also that the teachers are prepared, that we're also working with the school districts and the broader on the policy side as well to move that and helping move some of those systems. We saw in the Latina report that I mentioned as an example, of course, you have your four-year universities, your two-year community colleges, but we're also seeing, you know, a lot of new opportunities of folks going to apprenticeships, learning by doing. And again, similar to the Walkman story, right? Back in the day, those were like the original ways that engineers got, you know, got trained by on the job learning. You actually go ahead and demonstrate the skilling at that way. So part of the Caper Center, we also look at that, right? How are we also helping create more accessible pathways that are evolving, especially in the tech sector, all the way through looking at how are we helping invest in the future entrepreneurs or the current entrepreneurs, as well as the investors are investing in these entrepreneurs. And so we really look at the entire life cycle and the ecosystem, right? And the different roles the communities play as the talent, but also as the investors, as also now most recently in the policy side. So that's kind of where I've been focused the past three or plus years, helping the Caper Foundation and Caper Center as well be able to have a launch our equitable tech policy that looks at 9 specific policy issues. So then that way the Lily at 6-year-old doesn't get those opportunities just by luck, but that we actually are helping change the system. So that way it becomes accessible to all and not just, you know, to those who are able to find their way through or find that opportunity.
Is it a policy problem?
I think it's public policy. It depends what area, you know, what specific issue you're trying to tackle.
It depends what issue we're kind of. Give me an example of a bad policy for Latinos.
Yeah, so I mean, even now, like there's decisions as we can see from being in the Bay Area, where I'm doing the Caper Foundation. And when I first met you, we were working so focused on in Oakland, right, and looking at how to help. Create more opportunities there to get more folks, not just interested in technology, but be able to build the companies, be able to also stay in that area. And so I would say that there's, especially in that area, in the cost of living going up so high, and like cost of living is going up faster than inflation and way faster than any of the wages. So how are we also, you know, looking at ways of like, it's great that I'm here trying to get folks to build and create, but if we're also not able to keep the talent in our communities to be able to build and also provide those opportunities to others, then that becomes an issue that it's not in one organization. It's not just one specific you know, problem that we're tackling. It becomes a public policy issue, which is like things are interconnected. And so how are we also helping invest into the school system? How are we helping invest into new homes being built? How are we helping invest in making sure that we're creating, you know, some of those economic incentives as well for some of those founders or companies to be able to stay locally. And I think that's where, when we get into the ecosystem and policy conversations, it becomes pretty complex. But the part that we have to be centering is into the why are we doing this and for who, what are we tackling? And, you know, there's a lot of issues historically we have to be.
Yeah, I feel like policy it's just becoming more and more complicated to even have a conversation. And, mm-hmm. and to be honest, like I'm not a big fan of the government, you know, in terms of obviously I'm a tech founder, I'm a tech executive, and you know, tech executives think that we can fix anything, right? It's like like we're geniuses.
You're gonna fix
technology. And so like whatever we come up with is like a great idea. But no, but it's extremely complicated, right? It's like to be able to create a policy that has the right outcome, right?
Right,
and then lasts over time, and that it's and so it's like, yeah. You have any examples of like, so when you say you're involved in policy, like, what does that mean? At what level?
Yeah, so it varies. So I would say, so from the 4 focus areas of computer science, tech pathways, tech workplace, as well as entrepreneurship. As an example, in the computer science axis, which our CEO, Dr. Scott, who you met, and the CS Equity team, and our policy director as well, like those are areas where like, is there, how can we help create a way to have these high schools be able to have, regardless of the zip code where you're at, who is providing computer science classes, at what levels, and how are these being supported and funded, right? And of course, you look at the data, certain zip codes get more investment than other ones have gotten, right? And for many historical reasons that folks would appreciate of where public policy has helped make sure that our areas are not being continuously underinvested. And so that's one example. The other part that I've, especially since
the pandemic, and what's the problem there? Like, the problem is the richer neighborhoods have more taxes, I'm assuming. And so, or they're taking disproportionate, are they trying to get like proportionate to their taxes, or how does that work?
It depends in the level that you look at the budgeting. Sometimes, especially just looking at the school districts, right, that it varies like by city, by region, more affluent, more money. But there are also people are also sometimes more civically engaged and they're able to participate in different areas. Or there's alternatives, right, that have help support some of the gaps that may be existing there. I think for me, it's more the one that I've been more directly exposed to, or specifically in Oakland, that ties back to my days as a undergrad, because I got to study communications from an engineering perspective, like the telecommunications, satellites, that type of thing, and understanding connectivity was during the pandemic, where in Oakland, we had more than 50% of the kids who couldn't go to school. And that's a violation of their civil rights as young people and under 18 to not be able to have access to schooling in the United States when you're 7 to 8 miles away from the hub of Silicon Valley in 2021. When I think about that, right, we're talking about you going to Nicaragua, me going to Bolivia and different areas, like to think.
We're like, yeah, it's okay. It makes sense here, you know, whatever.
That's the part where it's like, huh? And so I think when people, for me, from a policy perspective, I was like, okay, this is looking at the investments, right, in connectivity and being able to, one, when folks were designing the cities, there's, you know, for the folks who may have worked in this a little bit more technical, there's a physical issue that you have to build in. You have to dig once, you have to build it up. Like, it's physical things that if you didn't have that, or that wasn't built in, how else are you going to do it, right? Who's going to pay for that? How do we work when it impacts people who are living there? It's residents. What are the alternatives? And I think from there, I was able to really work, and I helped from a policy perspective, me being in the community, going to the communities out in East Oakland and helping some of these, the families get onboarded to being able to get, you know, the ACP program as an example, which it ended already now as the funding for that. And so I'm like, okay, these are temporary things. Yeah. That's okay, but we need to build the actual infrastructure. And so I do think in that example, I was able to take the stories from the families, be able to provide some of the technical input at the state level, where we had, you know, we met with a lot of different leaders to making sure that we're providing input into the California Digital Equity Plan, as an example. Fast forward through the Oakland Undivided Coalition that had over 16 to 20 different community organizations, and through the city of Oakland, being able to get contribute to a $50 million investment into the infrastructure of Oakland. But that's a long range, right? That was like over a 4-year period to be able to move the story.
But then the problem is like, this is so hard. I think, and you know, and I think the K Force for funding and creating and supporting this organization, because we tend to not have enough money from our own community to do this, right? Or the expertise to do this. But it's awesome that you're the one fighting for it. But the problem is that if it's being gentrified, you know, Oakland, because there's no homes in Silicon Valley, you're doing all of this. It's only helping other people. Like, it's like, how can we keep up with the movement and the shifting and to this? Because it's like, it just takes a long time to make an impact. And I mean, that's part of why we have this, right? It's like, just like that 6-year-old you met the person, right? It's like, you know, they came and talked to you. We want the same thing here, right? It's like, I want people to hear the stories of, you know, right. I feel like a lot of Latinos are like, how do I make an impact? How do I help? Right?
Oh, no, go ahead. I was going to say the part that I think, to your point, it takes a long time. It has. But with this era of new technology, especially as we go into more of this, the hype that there is around AI, right? And like for us, it's really, it's data science, it's algorithms, it's data. And it's, there's a physical component to all of this, but for others, it may seem like magic. But all that to say that I do think it does take a long time overall for when we're trying to do systems change, right? But there are wins you build across. And for the folks who are listening to this podcast, I think that we've never had this level of technology power at our fingertips than any other generation, which means that right now, if you want, you could start your own company within an hour, website, everything, like get work on launching something, because a lot of these things have been automated. But the problem is if we don't have a vision of how we are going to apply this technology or what problems we're trying to solve, then it doesn't do any good, right? And so I do think that even though as I've learned through this, as an example, the broadband, right? I was like, oh my gosh, like this is going to take forever. What if there were more entrepreneurs that were looking at low orbit satellites or that were looking at alternatives where like, because the technology has advanced so much, folks can actually build, you know, their own local opportunities to connect their communities. Like,
It's like, how do we deliver this stuff digitally, right? So as sad truth is the communities are going to get pushed out, right? And it's like a lot of repercussions, right? To break away a community and a culture. I see that in Boston, and I'm doing a lot of nonprofits here where I'm supporting specific areas like East Boston and like Hyde Park. These are areas where there's like small cultural centers that are constantly being broken up, and we lose that identity and we bring culture in.
If we don't have an opportunity to empower the voices that are closest to that. And so as an example, like last year, we announced $1 million commitment to the Rise East in Oakland. And the communities that the organizations that were involved there, as an example, is the East Oakland Youth Development Center and other nonprofits that were there. Those were the folks that I got to work closer during the pandemic. This, the fact that that time to build the trust allowed us to then be able to work with them closer, where now that we're able to use AI to create, to learn, understand how to, you know, design workflows. They were able to create music, they were able to create art as a way to get exposure of how, what are the different use cases. And I do think that those, the opportunity that we have there is the more we can help create some of those skills. We have so many entrepreneurs in the making there. A lot of them are already entrepreneurs, micro entrepreneurs at, you know, a young age where they've been able to leverage the technology to start their clothing company over the summer and they're selling. And so I do think that there's that type of energy where it's a little bit more of a microeconomic area. But with that type of investment and exposure, I do think it's important. And then also the rethinking the community. I do think that if being so digital at times also doesn't allow us to know our neighbor, doesn't allow us to get out and get disconnected and see. And so I do think that in those pockets, there are some of these stories. But they need investment. They need more, you know, more support. And that's part of why we do the work that we do.
It's funny because you mentioned about the entrepreneurial aspect of our culture. I was just talking to, I went to Nicaragua, and I don't know that many people in Nicaragua, but I'm not, you know, 17. But I connected with a couple of people in my neighborhood. And I talked to one of my friends from childhood. And then he told his mother that I was in town. We just literally spent like 3 hours just retelling childhood memories. And one of those was her sister-in-law of the mother of my friend, Doña Eliane, just telling that the other, her in-law, remembers me on the first day that she moved to the neighborhood because I came to her door and I sold her a drawing.
Oh.
so like I was selling drawings. I sold her. Then I remember selling her mangoes, but I've forgotten that drawing. And so that was hilarious. But listen, and another thing is that when I was in Nicaragua, it was very different, right? Especially among Americans, right? I fuck with you so much. I just love joking around. I love bothering people. Joking and just like it's sometimes it's interpreted here as offensive, and then and nobody gets me. And then I go to Nicaragua, and it was like I'm just sitting with a group of people that I just met, and we're just joking to one another, and I never met them. And it was, and then they were talking about something else and something else, and all of a sudden I'm like, I am like that. I'm like that. I'm like that. And they're like, yeah, you're Nica. You're Nicaraguense. And it's like they all recognize me. They all know me without knowing me. It's like, and so this like, so I was like weird because I'm like, wow, I'm at a place where everybody's like me. We just joke. We're quick to decide. We're quick to make to think of an idea, of a solution, of a problem. We hustle, we get ready, we prepare, we anticipate, you know, and like we are, and it's like quick-witted, you know, not lazy, like just like go solve the problem. And I was like, wow, my whole country is just filled with this potential that I was able to take advantage of who I am. I am them. I am one of them. And yet a lot of them that are here are not able to fully. And I don't know if it's a policy thing. I don't know. I'm like a little bit biased. Like I feel like if I did it, I don't know what bias, but I just think it's people helped you. Like that woman that helped you. I think it's, I just had like 10, 20, 30, 50 of those people that always did one thing for me. And so I think we just gotta figure out how do we do more of that, right?
Yeah, I think it's that. And then I think when we look at it again into in the world where we're seeing so much stuff be automated, you know, where we are losing touch with sometimes even the physical world. Like earlier today, I went for a little hike over here to just get, you know, do my give thanks of just being able to have access to some of this stuff in a peaceful way that I know it's a gift that not everyone has, right? And I do think that there is some of those areas where there's just so many different combinations that could be. And then this is why you know, public policy is important, because if that the fact that high school that I was at was one of the first ones there in that area to have a magnet program, that was a decision that somebody made. There was resources that had to get, you know, get there. Somebody had to vouch for that. Whether it's a congressman member, school district, senator, to this day, I'm not sure, right? But it's, I'm sure it's a combination of that. And to have the young woman come into my specific classroom, she had to take time off from somewhere. So wherever, however she was able to take time off from work, there was some level of investment of her time that she invested in us, right? And I do think that in our community, especially to what you're saying, where when we have entered those workplaces, right? So I worked in the aerospace industry. I worked in consulting and tech consulting at Accenture and Booz. And there was a lot of times where, you know, the stats that we have in our reports, again, full circle, well, it's like, now I know what that means. I know what those numbers represent. I know what certain feelings are. And a lot of the times you kind of have to downplay your full power to some degree, your full voice, right? But I do think that times have changed, even despite everything that we're seeing. I do think from an innovation perspective, this is an opportunity where I do want to encourage our communities to be so dialed in into where they come from, the history of your family, your background, right? If we think about some of like the engineers in our bloodline into the different indigenous communities, right? There are some of the most advanced engineers, whether it's water irrigation, the way they mapped the stars, the way they were able to create power, they were massive. And so to me, whenever I walk into a room, I am connected to that, right? I am connected to this, of the different types of wisdom and knowledge and innate opportunities that are have come from where, from our countries, right, to some degree. And then being able to be here in the United States and be able to partake with others like that, I think is an important opportunity. But it's complex. We have to be
It's
realistic
complex.
about what we're dealing with, and there are key decisions that we got to say what we're doubling down and what we're not.
We'll leave the AI for another time, but I think what would be a call to action? Let me see. Let's think about the audience. It's like a Latino that obviously Latina, right? That it's in the trying to start the career, progress into the career. Let's say that you have an early young professional, right? Or maybe a parent of another Latino, right? And so like what call to action you have and what you've done. I think about you, right? And it's like what impact are you doing? How satisfied are you? and like inspire someone to do to we need more Lilies, right? And so what's the call to action? What advice you give them? Like they say, quit that job at Accenture and like go do this, right? What would you say?
I think the most important part is you have to have your North Star. You have to really be double down. And I'm very fortunate that I had their North Star since I was a kid. Seeing my mom work two jobs where she's like, your job is to go to school and do well. Your job is to do Excel. And so I remember when I was struggling in undergrad, I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I want to do this. She's like, whatever you start, you finish. And that has stuck to me in every single thing that I've done, no matter how challenging something is or how unknown it feels. I'm like, well, I put my foot in, now let's finish it, you know? And then once you finish, I would say that now in retrospect, if I was to give myself that feedback coming in into corporate America, I'd be like, this is the time for you to explore. Go do the full circle, learn, and then come back and do it again. Come back and do it again. Because I do think that we're in one of the most transformative times, like I mentioned earlier, in human history, to be honest. I think there's the types of technology, especially the way we're seeing AI, just transform everything, right? At a pace that we've never seen, everything from the levels of different automation and complexity. And a lot of these types of skills are not being taught fast enough in some of our public schools, in colleges. A lot of this stuff is being really learned at the workplace. So I do think that there is a big need for our community to be understanding your learning style and be a continuous learner. Be able to grab it where you can. Because
that I am concerned on that. Yeah. I guess when you touch on the AI, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's like I'm worried. Like I'm an optimist in the AI, but I'm a realist. But I think if we were having trouble explaining the generations and the parents of the Latinos of how to push and how to support their kids, you know, now everybody doesn't understand what AI does and how it works. And so like, again, we kind of like, I feel like it could reset everything right now. We're going to have to figure out how the kids, Latino generation that is in school, the 25%, how can we give the message directly to them and bypass the parents, right? Because I hear a lot, right, that they're like, my parents don't understand.
Right. But I do think that there is a multi-generational value because those same parents, their works are being impacted. The grandparents, yeah. The way we're, receiving information. If anything, I do think that I would love for the communities that are there to think about those use cases, to think about, and I remember this, and I share this because I would always think about like, how would my grandpa, my Papa Luis use this, right? And I went to this, it was like a demo day that they had. And it was like this kind of like a Hello Alexa type of thing, but for elderly care. And I asked a simple question. This was years ago. Oh, can my grandpa who speaks Spanish use this? And you know what? They were like, we didn't consider the use case. And I was like, what? Yeah. Like, hello? Like, how can you not when you look at, at the just data points of aging demographics? Where are they? Like, these were like, to some degree, like just basic data analysis, but business decisions. And so I think a lot of opportunity for our community to lean into those specific areas and think about how can you be leveraging this technology to help your parents, to help your grandparents, help your neighbors in a way that I think, and test it out. And I do think that there's an opportunity there that we'll be able to see, because I think for me, I go back to a lot of what my mentor told me once, where she's like, just because you can build it, should you build it? And just because you can scale it, should you scale it? And I do think in the times that we're in, there's huge decisions are going to be made on behalf of humanity, that our community voices are not there. And we need to change that. And the way to change that is that we got to support each other. We got to build companies. We got to understand the technologies, the good and the bad. So that way we're able to formalize critical positions and have our points of view and then be able to represent, have the back and forth. Because I think that that's even those difference in opinions are really critical right now for the level of technology that we're in. And so I'll, like, as an example, just like real quick on the Caper Foundation, right? The policy conversation can be so big and wide, but we're trying to look at it. We just did a partnership with Northwestern University with a $1 million gift to help them establish a center that connects the computer science students to policy, that helps the high school students think about how does tech policy, because tech policy now is just straight up policy. It's in every part in our lives. But to understand how these decisions impact our everyday life at an earlier stage, but also be able to see how can they themselves eventually be, you know, our representatives, be the senator, be in different parts. So then that way we have folks who also understand in a more nuanced way the power, but also be able to protect our communities, because we can't just keep accelerating without a North Star, because we're going to end up hurting each other if there is no understanding of what we're also trading off in humanity. And I do think in our Latino community, we need our people to have positions, to have visions, to have voices of that. And I'm inspired by that, right? Because to your point, this is an opportunity to reset everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Learn what worked, what didn't. So we really have to be really strategic in that. And I think that in the work that I do, that it allows me to really see the full picture, to see the entire ecosystem from communities to policymakers to investors to other foundations, and be able to champion that this is not about one group or not. This is about the future of our country, but also even on a global perspective. It's like, to what end? What's the end?
I mean, I think what you are, for me, what the end is, we need to help. We need to help humans find their purpose, really. And the purpose is constantly shifting. You know? Mm-hmm. I think that unfortunately we get too focused on survival in the Latino community, and we don't have time to think. But I think it's more important to think about purpose, and I think it's more important to think about, like you said, getting shit done. You know, finishing the job, finishing what you started. I was just having an argument with the Latina I mentor, and she's like doing all these things, and I'm like, just pick one. And I'm just so hard. I'm so rough with my feedback. I feel bad, you know. Later, and I'm apologizing because I'm like, sometimes that's not what they want to hear, right? And I was like, just pick one thing, set a goal. And she's like, well, I'm still trying to figure it out. And I'm like, just please set a goal. Just do one thing. And because I'm saying no to help her, because I have one goal right now. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of the things that I squeezed this podcast, right? Because I feel like recording the stories could go a longer way, so people can like listen to them and be inspired, right? And I'm nicer in the podcast than I am in person, like giving one-on-ones.
We have to have the real conversations. We have to.
You said it much nicer than I did, though. Yeah.
That was a nice way my mom put it, because she, I remember calling, she's like, stop. And I remember she's like, did you really put in the work that you said? I was like, well, maybe I could have done it. She's like, well, stop crying over spilled milk and finish the job. Finish when you start. But you know what?
Did she go, listen.
Yeah. But you know what, to your point, Elias, afterwards, you know, like now we get to joke about this stuff, but she actually told me not that long ago, she's like, I felt really bad telling you that. And she said that like, she, deep down inside, she was like, oh my gosh, my poor baby. But like, no, I have to do this. And she really was like, she herself was like, I need to give her the opportunity to grow into this. And having the faith, right? And having the belief. And I'm so glad that she never told me that she was like, because maybe I would have like found a softer end. But, you know, and it sticks to me now, especially now. Like, man, we're like I said, we're at such an interesting crossroads. But we cannot do business as usual. We cannot stay in the...
Yeah, this is my struggle. Like, it's like, I feel like I tend to be a little... pessimist, right? In the sense of like, I think success comes from very basic things, you know. Mm-hmm. Focus, finishing the job, do one thing, have a North Star, you know, have a chip on your whatever, right? And it's like, yeah, I know people say that's cliche, like work hard, but it's like clarity, right? Awareness. Mm-hmm. And then when people don't have it, I just push them hard.
Yeah,
because I feel like if you don't have those things, it's not gonna happen. You know what I mean? And so we need to deliver that news to more people around and push them, right? Because they can do it. The Latinos can do it. So we're definitely super capable, and we have great values, and we have great principles and characters of our culture.
Yeah.
We just need to get the job done.
Get the job done and honor, you know, the sacrifices that have been made to be here. We come from a lineage of the OG engineers that created so much with development and advancements in sciences that we get to appreciate it now. And it's all like, you know, it's all there. And to your point, I do, we'll love to make sure as folks are listening to this, some things dive into the unknown. It's not, it's okay. Like you, where you start, the most important part is start and then finish.
And finish it. Yeah.
And then you can go back and do it again and you get even better and better and better. But if we get, again, in the sidelines, or if we're also critiquing each other without providing that support, you know, in a way that's like actionable feedback, then we're also not helping each other, right? And like, this is not an spectator time anymore. We have to go and use it. The levels of technologies that we're working with impact every part of our life. And we got to do it and be able to. And the reason I want to stress that is because we need folks to also have developed points of views, positions, convictions. So then that way their North Star is aligned to that, you know? So it's not just like, oh, I have this, you know, idea, but it's like, no, how are you continuously sharpening that connecting dot? Yeah. The strategies, the journeys will change and that's okay. But your North Star should be something that it's your life's mission, your goal, right? And to your point, Elias, like I read your LinkedIn post of like, some folks may have all the money in the world, but if they have lost their purpose or they have lost part of themselves in the journey, they may still come back and feel empty, right? As opposed to somebody who maybe didn't have that, but they stuck to their North Star to maybe navigate it in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. That's why I think purpose is important. Thank you very much, Luni. This is amazing. I'm glad we were able to catch up.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm really proud of having you here working with K-Force and fighting the good fight. You know, I appreciate that you're a role model and thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Elias, for creating this space, and the work continues. Seguimos.
Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss when a new episode drops every other Tuesday.